This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Good morning, friends, and welcome to Jikoji. Wonderful to be here together. Appreciate your practice this morning. Before we begin the Dharma talk, I like to pause and remember the heritage of this land, which was cared for by the Ohlone people. That was the name of the native people who have lived in the Bay Area for over 10,000 years. So we are very recent immigrants to this land. This land was never ceded. That means it wasn't willingly given away. And it's important for us to recognize that truth. It remains present. Whether we speak of it or not, it is the truth. It can be very easy for these land acknowledgments to become kind of check, I've done it, or worse yet, a kind of virtue signaling. So I'd like us to receive this acknowledgement of where this land, who took care of this land, to allow it to bring something else forth in us other than guilt or shame about the harm that has been caused. I'd like us to allow in an awareness that we have a shared history. And we who practice here at Jikoji are not separate from that history, not separate from their loss. And so we could maybe understand our responsibility in this moment to each other. The ground beneath the sendo has been walked on by people for us. It has been cared for, tended to. So we thank them. We express our gratitude and responsibility to be good stewards of this ourselves. With some humility, I hope. So when I speak of the Ohlone people, and when I welcome you every week, I'm looking always for this web of relationships, because that's what's basically all I can see. I only see relationships. And this week is kind of special. Tonight, this afternoon, we're going to welcome back some extended family in our lineage, the Phoenix Heart Sangha. And we're starting a kind of a sesshin that we've never done before, welcoming back our family. My Dharma brother, Ian, is going to be here teaching. And it's really a kind of a welcoming home. Family, like you. But some of these people have had a lot of experience in our lineage for a long time. And I'm very happy to have them back in our little temple. And so I'm thinking about their return a lot. And Jiro and I are getting ready to go to Switzerland to be with our temple in Elsentor in Switzerland. So it's a lot of family right now. And for me, this is about relationship, of course. And in particular about unity. Unity. Kind of not as an abstract thought, but as a lived experience, letting it arise in your body. Because actually we exist in relationship to the Ohlone, to each other, right now. We exist in relationship. We are shaped by each other. So people often like to say, everything is one. It's become ubiquitous. It's everywhere. I think it's on coffee mug and it's on t-shirts and kind of has become spiritual wallpaper. You don't even notice it, it's so common. And while everything is one, just talking about it isn't what we're talking about. It actually points to something very real, which is an experience that is beyond words. And while everything is one can sound great, it also sometimes feels strangely far away when you're frustrated, or when your partner is upset, or when someone you love is ill, or your pet is ill. And then we can feel separate. Where's the oneness? The insight about everything is one has to come through the body, not through an intellectual understanding of, oh yeah, everything's one, right. But I want my latte with extra foam. Not like that. Most of the time we have an idea is that we are not one. It's an epidemic of not one, others. And sometimes just even the language of unity can increase our awareness of separation. We might kind of have an idea that there is no separation in the midst of feeling lonely and separate. And when people tell you, well, all is one, you may feel like, well, I'm not good at this either, being one, increasing the sense of separation. So, thankfully, our practice is not rooted in coffee cups slogans. It's rooted in sitting down. And we are not asked to adopt oneness like putting on a hat. And today I feel one with everything. Not like that. We're asked to look exactly at life as it is. That's what we're asked to do. Sit down with reality. So there's a koan from the Mumonkan, the Gateless Gate. These are collections, all the koans are collections of teaching stories between students and teachers and students and students and teachers and teachers. And they are all from the Chinese tradition from which Zen comes. And I particularly like this koan. It has different kinds of translations. I'm kind of mixing them up. Forgive me, translators. The title that I'm going to give you, this is case 10 from the Mumonkan, because Koan's going to ask me later what case number was that, and it's 10. And it is called Seize, Alone and Poor. And this is how the story goes. A monk named Seize says to the great teacher Sozan, Seize is utterly destitute. Poor. Will you give him some support? Now, at level one, this is very relatable, right? I need your support. You need my support. Sometimes we have a very deep sense of not being enough. There's not enough love and not enough time and not enough caring, not enough of me to go around and not enough of you coming at me. We have those ideas. But I want to say that in Zen koans, poor or destitute, can have another layer of meaning. And the commentaries are that Seize, the monk, had a little insight, a little awakening, a little awareness of non-separation, awareness of vast relationship. And he's testing the teacher. And he's saying, here I am, I'm poor, and I want to find out whether or not you can give me more. And guess how the teacher responds? He looks at him and says, Seize! And Seize says, yes, master! That's the whole poem as far as I'm concerned. But there's another line that I like. So the next line, his teacher says, you've already drunk three cups of the finest wine in China, and still you say your lips are parched? Seize is not offering this. Sozan is not offering Seize a philosophy. He's not saying, think about this. He's saying, Seize! And Seize says, yes, master. Direct, right now, right here, nothing else. He's telling him whether or not you imagine yourself as poor, if you fabricate this idea of poverty, or you fabricate this idea of great insight, Doesn't matter. It's over. Get on with it. Let's go right now. Day day. In the immediate, unmitigated response, teacher, that's nonsense. Direct, not creating a story about who I am and what a great insight I've had, or even if you want to use the other approach, imagining, no, I don't have that much. Could you give me more? So his teacher says, there's no distance between life and your participation in life. Right there, boom, right? Just instantly, spontaneous, the response to life. Just relationship. And this, I think, is the lived experience of unity. Not with an idea about what we're bringing to it, just immediate response to what's happening. You may have experienced that this morning. Immediate sense, well, I'm here. This is all I am. It's right here in this body. Who is it that's here in this body right there? What's happening? So unity is not necessarily merging with the cosmic light. Although I'm not knocking that, and if it happens, okay. It's the understanding that we're already in everything, including right now each other. This great teacher, Sozan, is saying, if you're hearing, you're already one with the hearing. You're breathing, you're already one with it. You're seeing, you're already one with the wholeness of our life. Transcending this idea of rich and poor, insight, non-insight, one. And that is actually freedom. Transcending these dualities, recognizing them. Goes on saying, in this moment, moment after moment after moment, just this ordinary moment right now, everything. How are you going to be? Yes, Master. This is this immediacy of reality that we practice when we're sitting down, paying close attention. What's right here? Not what happened yesterday, not what we're imagining for tomorrow. What's right here? Shikantaza, this is our practice of sitting and find as just sitting. I think it's the embodiment, physical embodiment, trying to meet reality as it is. And a few weeks ago, I received something really a teaching from an early student of Kobun's, our founder of our temple. Someone named Nick, thank you, Nick. I attended a way seeking mind talk that he gave at Berkeley Zen Center. And Kobun was his first teacher. He was 17 years old when he encountered Kobun. And I was just very touched by his entire talk. And I have to tell you, I cried through the whole thing. He was just so tender and vulnerable and open-hearted. And, you know, to be around that, it's wonderful. So a few days later, he sent me this, and I'm going to show you. This is his handwriting, copying from a board that Kobun had written on, Shikantaza. These are the characters. And for those of you who want this version, current ideographs. Ordinarily, we talk about Shikantaza as she meaning only or just. Han is open, clear. Ha is often said to hit, like to hit the target. And Za is sitting, as in Zazen. But Kobun did this thing, Shikantaza. He said, free and empty, she. Han is through, clear and open, ha, direct, za, the teeth. By the way, ka is kan, when we usually translate it, sometimes translate it as kind of to mind. So just minding target sitting is how we would, you know, typically translate that into just sitting. You're just sitting. You're not trying to gain anything. You're not going anywhere. You're not doing anything. You're just sitting. But what Tobin said, free, empty, through, clear, open, direct sitting. And I think this had something to do with our koan. To me, it does. Sitting without a buffer, experiencing reality without a buffer, something that creates a separation between reality and the experiencer of reality. No me over here trying to create a spiritual experience. Just this. Just this immediacy all the way through. This seems very much like the quality of mind that Sozan is asking Seisei to look at. Seisei! Yes, Master. Just this. Nothing more, nothing less. What's right here, right now? So a few days ago, I had a kind of a lived experience with what's right here, right now. I had an echocardiograph. When you get older, you have a lot of these tests. They're just like checking you out to see if you've got an expiration date. It's really weird. So they did an echo of my heart. And I was lying in this dark, air-conditioned room. And this lovely, kind, young technician named Angelo was moving this wand across my chest, mapping my heart. And I have to tell you that almost immediately my mind got pretty busy. What happens if my mitral valve is not in good shape? I have a little issue with my mitral valve. What happens if I'm going to need that surgery where they replace your mitral valve? And my neighbor had that. She's dead now, by the way. Didn't die. But, you know, your mind just starts, whoa, it's going off on this train into the, you know, paranoid fantasies of everything that can go wrong. I was in this imaginary future, which was scary. Valve surgery and long hospital corridors and feeling not alive and vibrant and hiking the mountains, but weakened. Not fully myself, whoever she is. I thought about the worry I would cause the people I love. And it would be hard to tell them, sorry, it's happening. I was really imagining becoming one of those kind of self-defined invalids who would talk at dinner parties about for my procedure. It was like a whole story. This only took about 30 seconds, by the way. This went boom, like a reality had just dropped into my lap and I was feeling it. Oh my gosh, what if? Meanwhile, what was actually happening was very straightforward and simple and actually loving. There was Angelo mapping my heart, and I could hear it. And because I had my valve prolapse, I heard a little bit of other sounds too. There it was. And I said, could I see the screen? He turns the screen towards me, saw my mitral valve. I saw my tricuspid valve. I saw the four chambers of it. I mean, it gives me goosebumps right now. It's amazing. There's my life force beating away. Since the moment those cells specialized, that's over six decades ago, kids, that heart, there it is. I'm so grateful. I'm nothing but gratitude for this heart and what it's given me so far. And then I flash my kids, two sons, they're grown-ups, but I remember hearing their heartbeats the first time. That was my heartbeat and their heartbeat and their father's heartbeat, all of your heartbeat. And I thought about, well, this gown I'm wearing, it's been worn by a lot of people over the years, and it's going to be worn by more people over the years. There was this one vast heartbeat. It wasn't just my heart. It was our heart. I wasn't worried about anything else, There was a cool, dark room and sweet Angelo taking care of me and all those ancestors, all of your ancestors, all of the ancestors going back to the beginning of time, taking care of me right then in that moment. And me taking care of them and forward and onward. The worry evaporated. I just had a great time. It was a beautiful experience, actually. There was still uncertainty. I'm not looking away and pretending that, sure, I don't know what's coming next. By the way, nor do you. But this uncertainty is not a problem because it's just the truth. I don't know what's coming next. It's not a problem. It's okay. I didn't create this heart. I didn't create my life. You could argue that not even my parents created my life, but the beginning of time, the great force, they call it the force in Star Wars, whatever you want to call it, it's unnameable. That created that. I'm the lucky beneficiary of all of that, and so are you. So we're just so lucky. Have a heartbeat and a liver and a brain and a body mostly work. And I guess what this points to again is relationship, this fundamental truth of non-separation. And yes, when we recognize the vastness of our interconnection of relationship, we might feel vulnerable. Not vulnerable as in weak, vulnerable like a superpower. Because you're not doing this alone. You're vastly supported. On and on and on and on and on. I hope you will be the support too. On and on and on and on. When we remember, when we turn to this interconnection, this endless sense of support. It doesn't become about us at all. It becomes about us. And we allow everything to touch us. Everything touches us. That means watching the news touches us. That means listening to your sniffles touches us. Everything. As we experience this, I am you and you are me, experience, not thinking about it, not carrying the mug and the hat that says, yeah, we're all one, babe. Experiencing. The edges soften. They just do. And it feels good. Yes, you're going to feel things. You're going to feel. We're not numbing you here. Kind of quite the opposite. We're opening what Coben said, free, empty, through. Clear, open, allowing everything, not picking and choosing, like we chanted this morning in the Xin Ming. There isn't this I that is a self that is separate from that whole thing that has predictable outcomes. Sorry. So, if we're like a monk in the koan and we make up these narratives about ourselves, we are making up separation. We are not allowing the whole experience in. This discrimination is actually the source of it. Reality will continue to refuse to be separate. It's constantly pointing at connection and relationship. Reality is relationship. to the extent that we fight reality and relationship, we suffer. It looks like reality is a bunch of isolated objects and countries. It's a conversation. So you already know this. Every breath you take, not your breath. It is your breath, of course. And keep breathing. But where did that breath come from? I mean, I can tell you the trees, but that's just one level. It's true of our words, too. Words are very culturally specific. I'm getting ready to go to Felsentor where they speak Swiss German. And part of the time, I'm going to have a translator. I'm thinking so much about words. It's culturally specific. And they're not ours either. Everywhere you go, it's relationship with words, with breath. Even the food we eat, it was food, and now it's being converted in relationship with this body into something that is fuel. And emotionally, too. I know everyone here has experienced that feeling of walking into a room and someone is very, uncomfortable in their own skin. And the whole room gets a little whiff of that, and everybody kind of gets a little uncomfortable in their own skin. Tension that comes with you sometimes. And everybody's responding perfectly unconsciously. You can observe that. And you can also observe walking in the room and you notice somebody head back laughing hysterically, and you kind of relax. Like they're willing to just let go. And so everyone in the room kind of, okay, it must be okay in here if they're willing to be that way. Expose their neck. My experience is that in every single moment of the life, we're all calling each other. Seize. Yes, Master. All day long. Not just humans, it's the mosquitoes and the trees and the leaves and the ground and birds, if you're a Jokoji, and the bells. It's call and response endlessly. Relationship. Before any philosophy about we are all one, any idea, narrative that I don't have enough, I'm not good at this, for any of that, just this. Like life is calling to itself and help us respond. Now, I'm not going to say that separation is not something that we experience is real, because if you step on my foot, I am not going to say, wonderful, everything is one. That didn't hurt at all. I will experience some pain if you step on my foot. And yet, underneath our experience of separateness, there's relationship. You'll say, oops, sorry, nothing, I'm fine. Relationship again. Please watch where you put your feet in life. And so that's why when I hear Sozan screaming, Seize! I do not hear it as an admonition or a criticism at all. I actually hear compassion. Usually when you hear about a Zen teacher screaming, it feels like you're getting whacked. But I don't hear it that way. I hear him saying, Seize! Look at all these incredible supports you've already had. This in this moment is everything that's ever experienced by everyone. Your cup is really full. Where are you that you think you're separate from all? Yeah. Now, that forgetting that our cup of the best Chinese wine has been filled three times, and we've had this delicious wine. The fact that we forget is really human. Please do not ch-ch-ch about that. It's okay. We forget and then we can return. That's what we're doing, sitting down. We return. And when we return again and again and again in our practice, all the little pointy spots make us feel separate. They really soften. And it's delightful, even in the midst of all the suffering. Okay. And the reason it's okay is not because we have achieved any. We have not achieved perfect oneness. It's just because life continues to show us over and over and over again this relationship that we're all in together. We're in a conversation all the time. There's just no pretending otherwise. I didn't try. It doesn't work. Find out for yourself. So one of the myriad ways to read Hoban's definition that I like is free, open, direct sitting. And I like this open. I like to think Hoban and say open means right in the middle of our messy lives, right in the middle of our shared messy lives, right in the middle of what's happening in the whole world. So, as our extended family, the Phoenix Heart Sangha, returns to Jokoji this week, and as all of us gather together, old friends, new friends, your faces, bird song, heartbeats, I hope we can return and remember that unity is not something that we manufacture by ourselves or going get. It's something we are already inside of. I hope we can all practice letting go of any ideas of separation, so that we can each be of some benefit to the immense suffering of the world caused by these ideas of separation. At least long enough to taste. Thank you for listening. Hey, your turn. I like to start with the people online so they can feel more in the room. So, anybody online, please just speak. Show.
Thank you, Sensei, for your talk. It was so helpful for me to hear you. Can you hear me?
I'm just turning my volume up. Go ahead.
I really learned from your talk about that sense of unity that we can realize even in suffering, even in grief, even in our mortality. Yesterday, I was sitting on a park bench in front of Mount Shasta and grieving like the potential future of my teacher, my former teacher, Angie Bosavane, who had been director at Jokoji for so long and with me for so long. And now it's hard. And suddenly I thought, what did she offer me? What was all this teaching about? Why am I crying? And I looked at the mountain and I got to see it. And I think that's what she taught me is to be intimate with this gift. And you said it in this unity, we can be free. Does it mean it doesn't hurt? It does. Yet I'm feeling my heart pumping. I'm feeling that connection with her heart that's pumping still. we sit with that, and it's a practice that she started me on, and can't be more grateful. Thank you.
Angie's name is on our altar, all of our altars right now. She's a beloved teacher. And she's not going anywhere, even when she's gone. Kone Sensei, I think I saw.
Sorry, I had to unmute. Seisho-san, thank you for bringing Angie into the room. My tea ceremony teacher, Peg, was a very close friend of Angie, early days of Kanando, Angie Koji, and I know exactly how you're feeling right now when Peg was dying. But again, there's that one story of the Zen master is dying and everybody's crying, and he says, "Why are you all crying?" And they're, "Well, because you're leaving us." And he's like, "Where do you think I'm going?" And that I finally was really able to take it in with Peg and later with other people who had died, because I realized she's right here. Angie is right here. She's never going to leave you. But thank you for bringing her into the room.
Okay, your turn, friends. Yes. The question is about the quality of relationship, not acknowledging that there are relationships that have caused suffering and will cause suffering and do cause suffering and create, vulnerability, not only in this person, but globally, right? Think of all of the levels of relationships for our dear little planet that cause some problems, continue to cause some problems. The question is, how do we deal with the both and the end of this, relative and the absolute? Technology making us, continuing to maybe make us feel a little bit more separate. That's a view. That is a view. In your hands, maybe not. Really, whose hands can you control? It's up to you. Cannot be separate. Can't do that for you. No one can do that for you. And technology can't change your response. You have to find your way to the relative and the absolute of potential damage, and then returning and returning and returning to what can I do? When you experience interconnection, when you can no longer not experience connection, you take care of what's right in front of you. That's it. That's what you're responsible for. What's right in front of you. We pick up a stick off the road so someone doesn't trip on it. We take really good care of a teacup. It's just what's right in front of you. That's what you can do. And if everybody took care of what's right in front of them with an understanding that that cup is serving me and I'm bowing to its existence, there's that kind of interpenetration that is both two items, not two items, one, not two at the same time. So I don't have an answer that is like a global answer because there's no magic wand. That's our childhood dream. Me too, sister. I live in a world of idealism and I really have to come back to reality all the time. What's right here? And that idea of harm that could happen if I lose track of this moment, if I lose track of this moment, that's at my hands. That's my responsibility. So, what I'm trying to point to is it's moment by moment by moment by moment by moment by moment on you. And what you do makes a difference. Huge. Hugely. Right now. And all the time. If you enter the room with an awareness of open-heartedness, vulnerability, willing to see everything as well as you can through this mind and body, taste the wine, three cups of wine, which would absolutely have me on the floor, by the way. But if you're willing, you're like broadcasting that for the whole world. I don't know what else you can do except meet yourself in each moment, open. Suzuki Roshi is very famous. I mentioned this in beginning instruction today. Of, he had this question that he answered a million different ways, but I'm very fond of one of the answers, and I'll probably get a list of them together sometime. He said, the most important thing, people would ask, what's the most important thing? The most important thing to stand on your own two feet was one of his answers. That does not mean be separate. Independence, responsibility is standing on your own two feet, but it does not mean separation. So you have to walk in that little middle space. That's what we all have to do. And in doing that, I think we're actually stopping evil and doing good for the benefit of all beings, like our first pure precept. And just by willing, being willing to be free, open, direct in each moment. I don't know what else. Maybe you teach me. All I got. That's all I've got.
Okay. Okay. Five. Album. Out how I see the computer.
Tell me your name again. I'm sorry. Chung. Chunmin, Chunmin. Chunmin is a regular here, and he asks this question about how do we deal with competition? And I have to tell you that I want to say Chunying because that's an idea that you have about scarcity, just like Seize, right? Their idea is that there's not enough, or that you have to do better, or that you're not enough. And that there's competition for resources. And I mean, I'm not sure I agree with you about that. At any given moment, of course, there is. I mean, if there's a bowl of ice cream and everyone's gotten to it before I get there, I'll feel like there's some scarcity. But in the big picture, my happiness cannot depend upon there being enough ice cream for me. That kind of a mind of poverty is what we call it in our practice. A mind of poverty means there's not enough. And it actually points to something very fundamental. And I share it with you, and everyone shares it on the planet, which is I'm not sure I'm enough. That's the fundamental teaching, that somehow we got a message pretty early on, probably, that we're not quite enough and that we have to do better and better and better. Again, Suzuki Roshi's famous statement is, you're all perfect just the way you are, and you could use a little improvement. You're already perfect. You're already fine. There is enough. It just is a mind habit to think there's not enough and that we have to compete. I'm not saying there's not competition. It exists as well. And you will have to sometimes compete in this way. You can choose to compete in this way that is entirely wholesome. That means not causing harm to yourself, not causing harm to anyone else. There is that because you're not trying to get something. You're trying to be in the moment, fully awake. One of Koban's teachings is don't compare. Now, Angie one time said, it must be the very last thing to go before you die, comparison. I thought that was right on, because we just have a habit of constantly comparing. And that can be, benign in some ways, like I like chocolate ice cream better than vanilla ice cream. That kind of comparing doesn't really seem to hurt anybody unless your happiness depends on chocolate ice cream and there's only vanilla. I don't know why I'm talking about ice cream. Sorry. The point is, comparison is it's going to arise. We've had an incredible amount of conditioning, especially in Western culture, this individuation that we talked about. It's up to you. Practice with this inside. You're not going to change anybody out there. I promise you, you will not change a person. They're all going to keep doing what they're going to do. My teacher, Vanya, says, you know, Pamela, people are going to do what people are going to do. That's a very bad Swiss German accent. Sorry, Vanya. But it's a great teaching. People are going to do what people are going to do. So you decide what you're going to do. You decide if you want to suffer like that. Feeling like there's not enough, I'm not enough, I gotta keep trying to get someplace else. If you can go towards something that calls you from this beautiful place of everybody's in this with me, yeah, I'm with you. Some people will come along and you'll go along with them. Some people will not, and they'll be like comparing, look what he got, look what I didn't get. It's not a happy place. So I recommend you turn that light this direction instead of that direction and see how you can work with it like a fool on fire inside. Okay. Thank you. I don't know if you could hear any of that, but there's someone here who has experienced an echocardiogram. And he was saying, I've been there, done that. And he saw, I think he experienced, we had a merging of experience, which is not just my heart, not just my body, one big, vast heart beating. And also this one. That's how it is. And he said very poignantly, I guess that's just what it's like being human. What it's like being human. Anybody else? It's 11:40 a.m. I mean, we should have that every week, man. That's even better than Tyson giving me the look. Anybody else? Yes. Last question, and then we can talk up above. Thank you for this question. It's very real and honest. The question is, when we feel connection, this vast interconnection, interbeing, as Thich Nhat Hanh would say, and so we want to help somebody who's suffering. But there's a piece in us that recognizes that helping this person is gonna be a little bit violation of our boundaries. Maybe not really wholesome is the word I want to use. And how do we deal with that? Well, the first thing that comes to mind is Koban's expression, I'm a helper, I'm a recovering fixer. I really like to help. I mean, it might be obvious. And I was a lawyer and a mother, and I'm gonna have all these helping careers. But Koban very famously said, no helping. How do I help people? No helping. No helping. That helping idea is already a separation. There's a me and a you. No helping. And you will naturally, through this body and mind, be of service. Someone will take up your offering of your existence without your having an intention to fix or help. You with me? So this isn't kind of an important thing because I can do that. Just I'm not so concerned about me a lot of the time. So I can just let the boundaries go and then later go, uh-oh, now I've set up this kind of form that boundaries are actually important. One has to take care of oneself in order to take care of other people. But it's not helping. You understand there's this kind of taking care of everything, the stick, the paper, the water, not wasting, taking really responsibility. Might end up helping. But that's not the energy. I'm going to fix you. I got something to offer. It's not like that. It's basically all a mutuality. This right now happening is us together. It's nothing other than that, nothing other than relationship. I cannot see anything other than relationship. And yeah, my job is to actually meet face to face with students all the time. And they're telling me the difficulties in their practice and in their lives. I can't do anything for them except meet them where they are and hold hands as we walk through this. That's not helping. That's not fixing. That's just, yeah, it's hard. This is what it's like to be a human. This is what it's like to be a human. We're going to feel things, and you can help by just being healthy. Here, good, healthy care of this one, and you will then automatically be an offering. The problem with kind of intellectually dismantling boundaries, it is not the same as non-separation. So, intellectually saying, it's the whole oneness thing again. It's not the slogan on the coffee cup. It's actually meeting what's right in front of you and caring. And that will, if it's done through that open-heartedness, it is never separating. It is never invading your boundaries. Because you can't operate from separation and call it selflessness. And yet, there's this person and this person and these people, and we have to take care. So it's that whole relative and absolute thing. Make yourself an offering the best that you can, but start here. Start here. And it's actually the hardest thing. It's very easy to give yourself away, but not with these little, I'm holding something back because I'm not actually merged. So take care of yourself. This is not a selfish taking care of. It's how can I be wholesome? I use that word a lot because I maybe someone here could give me a better word. I feel like I'm beating it to death. But wholesome is, again, not harming this, not harming this, not harming whole beautiful mess. And we will. I mean, right now, there's microbes doing stuff to harm the food that I went in to break it down to make it fuel. But having this intention to be more kind, be less self-involved, be less confused will help us to be of benefit automatically.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.